Since 2014, e-cigarettes have been the most commonly used tobacco product among our youngest people in the United States.
Differentiating EVALI versus influenza versus mycoplasma is next to impossible.
Vaping has actually increased from 11% to over 20%.
This can be a rapidly progressive illness.
This is a diagnosis of exclusion. There is no direct therapy at this time.
The number of suspected cases of EVALI has quadrupled. What do we do about it?
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. So happy that you are joining us for this podcast. Very excited to talk about this clinical topic that has certainly made headlines over the last several months and affected many of our younger individuals with significant pulmonary disease. But before we get on to our clinical topic, let me bring in my amazing co-stars and co-hosts here for CCPEM, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Gentlemen, how are you on this podcast?
Doing great. Doing great. Ready for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I am pretty psyched about it as well out here in the Bay Area. Of course, we're pulling for the Niners. Yeah, it should be a great game.
That's awesome, Rob. Yeah, I don't have a dog in this race, so I'll pull for the Niners too for you.
Well, good luck to your team out west, Rob. We know that you're going to be watching the game for sure, and probably millions and millions of others around the world will be tuning in very soon to watch the Super Bowl. A tremendous amount of headlines in the last many weeks. We've certainly had the novel coronavirus make a lot of headlines, and really more recently, a lot of travel restrictions coming from associated countries into the United States. It's certainly an evolving epidemic, and lots of places, I'm sure all of us, regardless of the four of us and then those of our listeners, have been dealing with isolation precautions, screening precautions as it relates to the coronavirus. Well, another thing that's made headlines in recent months is also EVALI. Now, what is that? E-cigarette or vaping product-associated lung injury certainly has been an evolving process as we've had more and more patients be diagnosed with it. We're learning a little bit more. We don't have the whole picture, but because of its prominence in the media and in the clinical arena, we felt that it would be a great time to talk about it, at least what we know thus far in terms of this illness. So I'm going to turn things over to John, who's going to lead us through this discussion on important aspects, pearls, and potentially pitfalls, as well as recognition and treatment for EVALI. So John, take it away.
Thanks, Mike. So I think what would be best to do is go through one of the largest epidemiologic reports about EVALI. Some of our listeners may have read a few clinical summaries. There's been a couple that have come out now in The Lancet, as well as New England Journal. But this one, I think, gives us a good amount of information, at least on the largest cohort report to date. And this is by Dr. Layton. And this was published just a few months ago in the New England Journal of Medicine. And it's based off their experience within the Illinois-Wisconsin region. So as you all know, electronic cigarettes or e-cigarettes include a diverse group of battery-powered devices that allow users to inhale aerosolized substances. So very different from smoke. I think we've all probably noticed people walking down the sidewalk in the city or in our communities with these big clouds of mist around them. And those are actually the e-cigarettes or the vaping devices. Now, e-cigarettes are commonly used to inhale nicotine, THC, CBD, and something called actually butane hash oils, which have a somewhat similar effect to THC, but are believed to contain fewer toxic chemicals than traditional cigarettes, which is part of the reason why they've become so popular over the past few years. Now, since 2014, e-cigarettes have been the most commonly used tobacco product among our youngest people in the United States. And since 2017, vaping has actually increased from 11% to over 20% among U.S. high school students. And in fact, greater than 70% of hospitalized patients are initially seen in the ED urgent care outpatient clinics. So it's really important for us as emergency physicians, urgent care physicians, or primary care physicians to be aware of the associated complications with this. And because it's so new, I think there's a lot that we just don't know. And unfortunately, with the trends of how fast it's growing, I think we're seeing a lot of these complications for the first time, and it can be quite frightening. And this certainly has made the news because over a four-month period, the number of suspected cases of EVOLI has quadrupled between July 2019 and September of this past year. Now, as of September this past year, New England Journal reported that a total of 908 cases of vaping-associated severe pulmonary disease across 45 states in the U.S., as well as the Virgin Islands. And that makes up about 495 confirmed cases and 413 suspected cases. So with that in mind, Mike, maybe you can take us through an initial presentation of someone who there's a concern for EVOLI or VAPI, as we'll come to talk about what those two different things mean.
Thanks, Sean. That's a great introduction. And in terms of clinical recognition, I think one of the important points is that at least in this cohort, along with other case series, case reports, and things from the CDC, we've certainly seen that these patients are on the younger side. So most of the initial or the median age of initial reported cohort cases in this series were 19 years of age. So a very, very young patient population. In fact, most have been in individuals less than 55 years of age, and about a third were under the age of 18. And you mentioned the marked increase among U.S. high school students, and that's consistent across this cohort report. Also, not only are they young, but as you would expect, most don't have any significant comorbidities. With the exception, in about a third of cases thus far, there has been a comorbidity of asthma, but really not many other comorbidities. Now, in terms of you taking the history of present illness, someone coming in with respiratory complaints, think to yourself, how often are you asking about the potential for e-cigarette use or vaping? In terms of the onset of this illness, most retrospectively, when they go back, a little over 90% have reported vaping use within a week of the onset of their symptoms. Most, almost 90%, report or admit to daily e-cigarette use with either nicotine or THC products. Now, in terms of the symptoms that they will present with, this is going to be respiratory symptoms. The most common symptom they're going to come in, they'll have a febrile illness. But with respect to the respiratory symptoms, importantly, really those upper respiratory symptoms, rhinorrhea, sneezing, congestion, aren't that common in cases diagnosed thus far. It's really more of a lower respiratory symptoms of shortness of breath, cough, and also chest pain associated with that. So fever, lower respiratory symptoms, and then GI symptoms are also common. So reporting nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain. So we are right in this season of influenza. We are in this season, an epidemic now of the coronavirus. In patients coming in, they're febrile and respiratory. We're focused in on infectious etiology, but really think in terms of that history of present illness, the social history, be mindful about asking about vaping use. Now, in terms of physical exam, these patients will tend to be on the more critical sides. It's likely that you'll see tachycardia, tachypnea, and in terms of their pulse oximetry reading, some degree of moderate to severe hypoxemia. So in this case series, this New England Journal report, up to about 40% had a pulse oximetry reading ranging between 89 to 94% on room air. And another third had what we would consider more severe hypoxemia with pulse oximetry readings less than 89% on room air. So big thing, fever, lower respiratory symptoms, and also GI symptoms really are the classic or characterize the clinical presentation for these patients.
That's a great summary, Mike. And I think, you know, to highlight one of the other pearls that you just spoke about is, to be honest, just asking about e-cigarette use. And I mean, I don't consider myself very old, but I mean, e-cigarette use wasn't even around when I was a teenager. So including that in our social history is not something that I was taught nor have done throughout my early medical career. So this is a really important question and something that, with how popular it's become, something to include in our regular history taking. So Peter, maybe you could walk us through the diagnostic testing and diagnosis of someone with suspected case of EVOLI.
Absolutely. When we think about this, these patients, from a radiographic standpoint, when we're looking at the chest x-ray, it can give us everything, but most classically, it's going to be bilateral patchy infiltrates. So differentiating that, EVOLI versus influenza versus mycoplasma, is next to impossible. You could throw into there interstitial lung disease or also pneumonitis. So it makes it tough. From a CT standpoint, again, looks more like ARDS picture with basilar ground glass opacifications by Lobar, right? So it's diffuse. Again, sparing the periphery, so more centrally located with clearing in the periphery. If we're looking at lab testing, you know, here you got somebody with some cough, fever, and they now have leukocytosis. Looks like a neutrophil predominance with neutrophil percentages greater than 80%. So distinguishing EVALI from a community-acquired pneumonia, atypical, is going to be next to impossible. The clinical picture really ranges from multifocal pneumonia to severe ARDS or even a chemical pneumonitis. When we talk now about diagnosis, it'll probably be made after this extensive inpatient testing to exclude other common diseases. So people are typically going to be getting blood cultures and sputum cultures as well, but this is a diagnosis of exclusion. There is no direct therapy at this time, and there is no definitive singular lab test that says this is EVALI. What makes it more important, as you've already heard both from John and Mike, is asking the question, has there been e-cigarette usage within 90 days of these symptoms? That's the key piece here. Confirmed case must include positive abnormal imaging, chest x-ray with pulmonary infiltrates or ground glass opacification on CT of the chest with negative infectious disease workup, which would include a respiratory viral panel, our influenza PCR, strep pneumoniae and Legionella urine antigens, blood cultures, sputum culture, also bronchoalveolar lavage, so a BAL, and HIV testing. You can imagine how this is really an extensive workup for these patients. There is no evidence of alternative cause, cardiac, rheumatologic, or neoplastic process in these diseases. You can send a SED rate and CRP, but it's not consistently high in all cases of EVALI. The probable cause is some overlying infection, but the current clinical team and experts believe that this is not a sole cause for the acute illness. So it's kind of like a hitchhiker and an add-on. Interestingly, and this is an important point I feel, is that the vitamin E acetate oil was detected in 94% of BALs in the lavages patients in 51 patient case series. So that vitamin E acetate oil may be a contributing factor.
Those are some great points, Peter. I think that at the end of the day, it's an extensive workup before we can even confirm a case. And occasionally in a probable cause in an e-cigarette user, there may be an infection, and that's important because an infection itself can maybe be a trigger or send the patient over the edge, but it's ultimately not the sole cause, it's the vaping. And I agree, I think it's really interesting with this vitamin E and whether or not that's going to be a main contributor here. These fat-soluble oils that get into the lungs and fairly heavily may be a focal irritant, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next 6 months as more patients get tested. But Rob, Mike walked us through nicely how to examine the initial patient, get a good history, Peter, with our diagnosis. But what do we do about it? We have a patient who we're concerned who has EVALI. What do we do in the first few hours as they present in the emergency department and potentially really critically ill? Is there anything we should be thinking about?
Yeah, John, it's important to note that this can be a rapidly progressive illness with worsening hypoxia occurring over 24 hours or even less. And ICU admission rates in these cases are as high as 70%. They range from about 40 to 70%. And what's bringing them to the ICU is hypoxia and respiratory failure. And as you both mentioned, this is a tough diagnosis, and it's a diagnosis of essentially of exclusion. So you're going to want to start off in the ED. They're going to present with those infiltrates, and you're not going to be able to distinguish those infiltrates from true pneumonia. So you're going to want to start off with broad treatment for pneumonia, presumably as if they're at risk for flu, treating for influenza as well, antibiotics for community-acquired pneumonia. So it's going to be hard to hold off on antibiotics, and you really should, by all means, start broad with antibiotics. And the treatment really is primarily supportive care otherwise. You're really going to have to pay attention to their signs of respiratory failure, These are patients in whom it's a good idea to go ahead and start with non-invasive mechanical ventilation, presumably with high flow or BiPAP, choosing one of the two according to their respiratory mechanics. But often these patients really wind up needing intubation because of the rapid progression of disease. Steroids appear to be helpful, and when we're talking about steroids here, we're talking about sort of moderate asthma type dose steroids in the 40 to 60 milligram a day range, not the gram solumedrol type steroids. So I would go ahead and give these patients some steroids. And as with other types of severe hypoxic respiratory failure, you certainly should consider ECMO. There have been a couple of case series using ECMO in these patients, again, because primarily they're not typically in profound shock. They just have severe hypoxia. And so you really want to think about that early on for these patients. You want to get perhaps anticipate whether your young patient or your patient with this disease is going to require ECMO, and you want to get that started early. The CDC also recommends that clinicians report cases of VAPI to their state and local health department, as well as to the FDA, and we'll have the link on the website for that. And the types of information that they're going to want to know about this are what types of devices were the patients using? Were they using bottles, cartridges, or pods? What specific types of liquids did they use? Were they nicotine products, THC products, flavored fluids? Were devices, liquids, refill pods, and cartridges shared with other people? Were old cartridges or pods reused? Or did they alter them? Were they using some homemade or commercial products? Were devices used to inhale drugs that were concentrated by heating prior to vaping, so-called dabbing? And they also are going to want to know, try and get some details about the actual vaping behavior, like how often they're vaping, cloud volume, frequency of puffs, stealth vaping, and notably Valsalva at an inhalation. With a Valsalva maneuver might cause further lung injury and also might embed those products more deeply in the lung. So bottom line from a treatment standpoint is that it's primarily supportive care. You really have to pay attention to progression of hypoxia. You should go ahead and treat with antibiotics. Consider steroids, and probably a good idea just to go ahead and give them steroids. Start off with non-invasive mechanical ventilation, but anticipate that many, if not most of these cases, are going to wind up getting intubated. And then finally, get ready for ECMO.
Oh, that was a great summary, Robin. While I think some of that might sound discouraging as there's not a lot we can do, there are some things that early on we have to keep in mind, and certainly details are important as we take care of these sick respiratory illnesses as they come through our ED doors. So, yeah, that was a great summary, and I think we're all going to learn a lot about EVOLI over the next coming 6 to 12 months as more reports come out, information about pathology, because unfortunately, some patients are not making it through this acute illness. So this is very, very early on, but a very, very important topic, I think. And thanks, guys, for such a great review.
John, that was outstanding. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Rob, for some outstanding pearls on this evolving illness. And certainly, by the time we all meet at our next podcast here later in February, we're going to know even more, perhaps, of the coronavirus. We will continue to be confronting patients that are presenting with influenza. I know that we have seen a just tremendous amount of influenza in Baltimore at the University of Maryland. Not only in our patients, but a number of the staff have also become infected, and it's running rampant in our school systems and our communities here. So as you're confronting these patients, they're coming in, they're going to have fever, they're going to have respiratory complaints and GI complaints. We're going to perhaps focus right in on influenza, upper respiratory symptoms, be thinking about novel viruses, but also in the social history, just don't forget to ask about vaping or e-cigarette use. So my thanks to the three of you. We are certainly looking forward to any questions that any of our listeners may have. Just shoot us those through the website. We'll be happy to get some responses back to you. In terms of the handout, that'll be up also on the website, where, as Rob indicated, we'll give you the link to some of the CDC documents along with a citation for this most recent New England Journal of Medicine article. So I think that's going to do it for now. We are just about out of time in terms of this podcast for CCPEM. Rob, we hope that when we reconvene that your Niners have been victorious in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I have to confess that I'm a Cowboy fan originally, but I definitely am. I know. You're an Eagles fan. I know that, John. But I'm definitely pulling for the Niners. Everybody here is pretty excited about the game.
Well, sounds good. Well, that's going to do it for this podcast. Once again, I'm Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Looking forward to talking with all of you on our next podcast. Bye for now.